Hey, welcome back to Control T. This is Henry.
This is Megan Rose Dickey. Do you want to say your last name?
Yeah, it's Picavet.
Okay, cool.
My middle name's Oliver.
One T, no two T's.
Just the one.
Just one T.
That's it. Always has been.
Cool.
How are you doing, Megan? How are you doing this week?
I'm doing well. My allergies have been off the chain.
I know. I sit next to you. And that's what happens when you take expired Allegra D.
All right. Anyway, today...
It doesn't help.
I feel a little bit better today. But yeah, that's not really important to anyone. So I feel great. How are you, Henry?
I'm fine. I didn't sleep well.
You nervous about the episode?
Which one? This one?
Yeah.
That we're about to record?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, why couldn't you sleep?
Oh, just normal Wednesday night inability to sleep, I guess. I was up still till like 3 a.m. or something.
Jesus.
And I got up and I had to do things. Prep. Slack. Lots of little slacks I had to send and whatnot. A little work last night.
Yeah.
Like 1 a.m. Whatever. It's fine. I'm fine.
Good.
I'm fine.
Good.
I did watch the Oscars. I don't watch those things. Okay. Well, every year I do this, I say, damn it, next year, watch every single movie. And I always say to myself, I'm going to do that. And I basically never do. I saw one of the movies this year.
Get Out.
Oh, two. Two of the movies. Get Out
and
Lady Bird.
Oh, yeah. That was funny. I thought Lady Bird was funny.
It was all right. It was cool. But I feel overwhelmed. And then what happens is the movie season comes. I feel overwhelmed. And then this thing I heard about that I had never heard about.
The fish movie?
No. Well, no. Movie Pass.
Oh, yes, Movie Pass. I thought because
you thought I was gonna go do the a whole riff. I mean, I can riff on.
We don't need to. Yeah, I don't know, The Shape of Water or something.
Yeah.
Okay, but so I guess if you had Movie Pass, which lets
been a lot
you
easier.
Yeah, because you can just see as many movies as you want for one monthly fee, then maybe you would have felt more inclined to see all of the movies. It would have been cheaper for sure.
Yeah. So. MoviePass has been in the news a lot in the last, I don't know, month or so.
Yeah,
starting with an AMC thing and then some stuff this week, some DROMs.
Yeah, so the most recent DROMs is about MoviePass, its CEO, Mitch.
It's Lowe.
Mitch Lowe. Yeah, so MoviePass CEO, Mitch Lowe. That kind of rhymes in a weird way.
You know, it rhymes.
Okay, MoviePass CEO, Mitch Lowe.
It fully rhymes.
Okay, cool. He proudly said that the app tracks your location before and after movies. So before you even leave the house, like, it knows what you're doing. And as TechCrunch's Devin Coldaway noted, Lowe was very proud of this. But then Devin reached out to MoviePass, and they have since said that they'll stop tracking that. They'll stop using that data. But it's not clear actually if they'll stop collecting it or just stop using it.
When we download apps, we know you can turn off your location, you can turn on your location, all that stuff, right? So when you're using this app, normally it tracks you like apps do, but it feels like they're not being very clear about what they're doing. But he said, the CEO said, we watch how you drive from home to the movies. We watch where you go afterwards. So that's what he said to an audience, right? It's like, I mean, so why?
So the why is because MoviePass barely makes any money. And their long-term plan is to sell a bunch of this data to marketers and advertisers and, they want to sell this data. They want to sell it. Like, so that's why they're collecting it.
Like, everybody wants to sell data. But I think what was the egregious error was here was his saying it like this. And then the way that he said it in front of this audience, he's like, yeah, we're watching. We're watching where you go afterwards. We're watching because we want to take that data and sell it somehow to help us make some money. Because when MoviePass started, didn't it used to cost $30 a month? Now it's $10 a month, right?
So yeah, I went from 30 to currently it's $7.99 a month to see as many movies as you want. But the thing is that it's not like MoviePass is still paying full price for those movies to the theaters. And that's why MoviePass has been trying to make deals with AMC, for example. And they were like, well, you know, since we are sending more moviegoers your way, like, can we get a cut of concessions or ticket sales? And AMC was like, no. And so then MoviePass decided to pull out of like 10 of their major theaters.
So now it's, what'd you say, $7.99?
Yeah, $7.99.
That's insane to me.
Yeah, so yeah, MoviePass is swallowing that cost.
So in a movie cost, and AMC, I don't know, there was something about, there's like, this is all a numbers game, right? Because AMC's like, we're not getting a cut. But so I don't go to the movies that much, but if I do MoviePass, then am I going to the movies suddenly four times a month? And that means what? I guess I buy popcorn four times a month. I don't know. That still isn't getting AMC any money, but MoviePass is paying. But we don't know how much MoviePass is paying.
Do we? MoviePass is just paying the standard ticket price. So even though, like, let's say I sign up for MoviePass, I pay MoviePass $7.99 a month. Let's say I see 10 movies that month. I'm still only paying $7.99. MoviePass is paying AMC or whatever theater, like the $15 or whatever it costs to see a movie per movie. So MoviePass is essentially hoping that people actually won't really use like use the service. Like, they'll sign up, but maybe see like one movie a month, two movies tops. But I think that's not what's happening right now. So hence where the whole selling the data comes in, because they're clearly having issues getting movie theaters to split revenue with them. So now they're thinking like, okay, well, like maybe we can sell this data, and then like nearby, like, or for example, like nearby businesses could then push like deals that person's way. It's like, oh, like you're seeing a movie at like,
we see you're currently walking by.
Right. Walking by the 7-Eleven. Oh, well, buy a Slurpee. I mean,
things have done that before. I mean, didn't Foursquare do shit like that?
Foursquare, yeah, that was like their whole steez. So
they're doing so well.
Yeah, but then so right now there are about 2 million MoviePass subscribers, and Mitch Lowe, the CEO, was saying that he projects subscribers reaching 5 million by the end of this year, which is kind of nutso. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not a subscriber.
Yeah, you were really wrestling with that this week.
I was. So, I mean, it's definitely a good deal, but like a really amazing deal. Like you can't really deny that. But my thing is, I like to buy my movie tickets ahead of time, and you're not able to do that with MoviePass. You actually have to physically go to the theater, bust out the MoviePass credit card that they give you, and then like buy the ticket for that showing and just hope that it's not sold out. And that's too stressful for me. Like I don't like to play that game.
Wouldn't work for you then. you have to call ahead and get some tickets in advance. But
well, go online. Who would I call?
I don't know, the theater. Come on. Think that didn't we have to do that in the 70s?
Is that how it worked back then? I wasn't there.
So the they updated the app. They released a thing last night, and they were like, we're not gonna keep any unused location data.
Which,
well, just turn off your location data on the app and everybody will be fine, I guess. But I still don't know why I'm not gonna do this. But I also don't know why I watched the 5-hour Bachelor finale this week. So those questions are for another time.
Yeah.
So when you are walking down the street, right? You're local, right? And you might want to know. So like, so you just raised a concern about, I can't go to the movies just like willy nilly. I've got to like buy the tickets online. Well, what if you couldn't buy the tickets online and you needed to just go to the theater, but you wanted to know if like a fire hydrant exploded on the corner of the movie theater, you would hope that there is a local news source that you can check.
But so I probably wouldn't. My concern when seeing a movie isn't, oh my God, I wonder if a fire hydrant exploded. But if one did explode, I would want to know.
Right. So you walking down the street and like, oh shit, there's like a river of water running down like Market. What has happened? Trying to see a movie at Westfield. You would go to, I don't know, something like Hoodline.
Honestly, or Twitter, but
Twitter
yeah.
too. Hoodline's going to tap into that Twitter faucet, maybe. I don't know.
True that.
And Hoodline is, its most basic level is a hyperlocal news site. So they are, they currently, that when they started, they covered San Francisco neighborhoods, but they, it was very slow ramp up. They would do Tenderloin and then Financial District. Then they introduced Soma, Mission. And then they moved over to Oakland and covered a couple of neighborhoods in Oakland. And so that's where they are. So what we're trying to do here is make a connection between MoviePass, the local. I mean, look, you go to the movies, it's a local experience.
It is.
And I don't think people think about that. I mean, yeah, we're going and we're watching, excuse this tangent, we're going and we're watching, you know, a fish movie. And whatever, all those movies, Coco, all of that stuff. And it's very Hollywood. It's very global, right? And mm-hmm. then, but if you go to a physical movie theater, you are sitting there with somebody who theoretically lives in your area, unless they've come from far away or whatever. But it's a local experience, and you're experiencing your, it's a local experience. And,
yeah.
And so I don't know. It's there is the local aspect of the movie going experience to be had, right? Now, if there's a fire hydrant that explodes out in front of the theater, you want to know about it, or you when you leave the theater, you are all going to experience the night, the crisp air, right? Mm-hmm. Damn, it's cold suddenly, or oh damn, it started raining. When did that happen? When I came in the theater, it was sunny. I mean, all that shit happens when we leave or whatever. So, yeah,
no. But yeah, no, you're totally right. It is a local experience. I think yeah, a good example of this was when we went to see Black Panther in Oakland at the Grand Lake Theater, and when it said like in Oakland, California, everyone was like, yeah, 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 you know? Which also happened in San Francisco because it was like local enough, but that probably didn't happen,
Omaha,
I don't know,
or Omaha, like, or
yeah,
like
Kansas City.
Or probably New York. You think it, I mean, unless somebody was from
they
Oakland,
better
New
not.
York. Unless somebody was said East Bay.
Maybe if they were like the town, or like, you know, maybe, yeah.
Which why are the Golden State Warriors wearing the town jerseys anyways?
What? The town?
They're leaving Oakland. They're going to San Francisco next season. So they need to stop wearing those jerseys. Anyways.
But all of that type of Golden State Warriors stuff, leaving the town, going to
there's
wherever. Did they come in San Francisco?
Yes.
Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're building the stadium down the street.
Oh right. Yeah. It's gonna be so bad for traffic.
Oh, it's gonna be terrible. When there is a game between the Warriors and the Giants, I would actually like to see that. I would actually like to see
which sport though. Which sport would they play?
I don't know. Each other's sports. I don't know. That would be cool.
Oh, at the same time.
Basketball.
Oh yeah, wasn't basketball a movie?
So anyway,
but
yeah.
If that were to happen, that'd be covered.
Oh, it's gonna happen.
That'd be a great
traffic
story.
Avoid this area. So
for Hoodland,
what we're trying to get at. Dear listeners who are still listening, is that our guest on the episode today is Eric Eldon, who is the co-founder of Hoodline, and I should say the former co-editor and my former boss of TechCrunch. And he came into the studio a few weeks ago and we talked about a new development that Hoodline just announced. And so let's unpack this thing. Local news is big. We all live locally. Even though we live in this global world, mm-hmm. we all do want to know what is going on down the street.
Right.
And we're not accustomed to finding that out. And we've been in the office here sometimes and like we've heard sirens or we've heard that there's been like, but what do? We go to Google and we go like Townsend Street plus fire plus sirens plus, you know, like what plus
right.
what just happened or whatever. Right.
Right.
So Eric left TechCrunch in 2014, and you know he'll talk about this a little bit, but he went to start Hoodline, which was called hyperlocal news, which I like to call. You called it. What'd you call it yesterday?
Street corner local.
I was looking at their site, and they say street level.
Yeah.
So
okay.
You were on the right. You were on the same track there.
Right track.
And as they went on, they started to scrape local data to help them write these stories. And they would have, you know, a bunch of journalists and some stringers, some full-time writers, and they would report this local news. But what ends up happening is, we know when DNA Info in Gothamist was just shut down because, you know, God forbid they wanted to join a union, they just shut those sites down. Those were hyper-local sites that served their readers in those neighborhoods. Chicagoist, LAist, SFist, all shut down. So also Patch was another local news network, right? So Hoodline gets this data and starts scraping things from like Yelp, Zumper.
Is Twitter one of them? Does it scrape from Twitter?
No, I don't think so. They embed the tweets, and they instituted these tip lines that they would give. And it was just like they were doing a lot of just like throwing things out there and just like trying to get people to also help them report the news. So, I mean, I would say, like, Eric, there's some stuff going on this corner, and I've like texted him before. But ZipRecruiter also, by the way, we are not sponsored by ZipRecruiter. If you're a podcast listener, I did just say ZipRecruiter. But anyways, so they have all these data pipelines, and they were just still going on. And so last month, or end of January, they announced that they were going to start this local data wire news service, which is they just take all this data and they package it and they just hand it to news outlets to help them report their stories. And so, you know, we wonder, are you trying to take jobs away from writers? That's the big question, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
or also, like, is it fueling potential competitors down the road? Like, they're doing all of the, because I mean, they're doing all of the work, and then they're just kind of, I mean, granted, they're not just giving it, they're selling it to these other news orgs, but I don't know. I just wonder if that's sustainable.
You know, it's when you have this conversation, when you think about, is you as a writer, me as an editor, and trying to put together stories, and you can talk to three people, and it's like, oh, I need to go do this, or I need to go do find this information out, or I need to go down to the San Francisco library because I need their data on something, or some of these government data sets. And that's what the business, and I believe that's what they are creating, and they have different data sets that you can pull from. And this is, you know, starting at local, the local level. So the real estate stories do really well. Like how much can you buy a house for or rent an apartment for in this neighborhood?
Yeah.
Those do really well. Yelp, restaurants opening. When we think of Yelp and when we think of like Zumper or Zillow and all those places, we're like, eh. But if you really think about it, gym openings, yoga studio openings, bar openings, restaurant openings, those are all things that we want to know that's happening in our neighborhoods. And so if you want to do a bigger, I mean, they've done these big stories with these data sets. Like they've looked at empty buildings in the Castro over time and have written these long stories around this data, right? And so that is what then, as far as expanding, they want to offer this to other outlets nationwide. And they have some help from Disney.
I didn't realize they had... Did Disney invest?
They did a Disney Accelerator last year, and they presented this to them, and then they have a partnership with Disney and ABC. So ABC Local here in San Francisco, you'll see some of their stuff on TV.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah, I ended up going down the Hoodline.
Oh yeah, the other day.
Rabbit hole the other day. I forget how it happened.
We were talking about something.
Okay, yeah, so we were talking about, I think we were talking about London Breed.
Uh-huh. SF and, mayoral candidate.
Right. And somehow I ended up on a Hoodline story about the Fillmore. So she grew up kind of like around the Fillmore district in San Francisco, like Western Addition. And she was quoted in one of these articles. It was like a four part series on the Fillmore in San Francisco, which is like a historically black neighborhood, but because of some city-led redevelopment that happened in like the 60s and 70s, a lot of black people were pushed out of that area. And then, you know, I was like reading along, and my family has a building on Fillmore, and it's one of the oldest buildings on that street, because back in like the 60s, when they were like doing all of this redevelopment, my grandfather, who had his dental office there, which is now my dad's dental office, he was like, no, like, we're not going to let you just, you know, tear down this building. But as I was like reading the story, I saw this image from before. So like before they totally like redid that street. And so then I saw my dad's building. I was like, oh shit. And like it like looked, there's like a different sign and whatnot. It used to have this big sign that said like Palace Chop Suey. And now it's just kind of like a slightly smaller sign that still says like the palace, but it's like from that era. And then I ended up talking to my dad, and it just kind of like
this,
yeah.
This anecdote brought to you by Hoodline.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's cool because I mean, I've only ever received that type of information from my dad in passing and like, just like in random conversations throughout the last like 28 years of my life. But like, that was the first time I'd actually read about that.
Yeah. Yeah. See it documented. Yeah, for sure.
And like saw like and old then the images.
Picture, that picture was cool. I just looked over your screen and it was big, high res, black and white.
Yeah.
As high res as it could be, right?
Right. mean, like not really your, high
it,
res.
It filled
but
your screen.
Yeah.
So stories like that. I often find myself seeing an old building in San Francisco when Chris and I were at City Lights the other day. We were talking about a building, and my first thought, which I didn't actually share out loud, was I wonder if Hoodline knows anything about this building, or if I could like hit up Eric and say, hey, you guys done a story on this, which I've done before. And that's their bag. I mean, and you know, if you think about it, I mean, it's too bad that every city in the country can't pay for journalists to just hit the streets and walk around and write these things. But at the same time, if Hoodline or something like Hoodline can provide this data, information about historic buildings that are still there, what used to be in that building, how many people lived on that block, and then they can package that data, and then the writer can then just take it in a template or whatever and just use it or rework it or fit it into a bigger story that they're spending even more time writing and making more rich. That's, you know, that's the benefit there. You know, I wish venture capital would fund journalism. I wish, and just close their eyes, just give them a bunch of money, just close their eyes and
yeah,
walk
then
away.
Yeah, and be like, all right, and do your thing. What
inform
you do.
The
yeah.
fucking world with globally and locally, so we can all be informed and be empowered to be better citizens. But yeah, but by all means, go ahead and fund stupid apps. So our guest today, after this long introduction into our guest today around news, is Eric Eldin, as I mentioned. And you and I both sat in the studio with him and asked him some questions, and he talked.
He did.
He sure did.
Yeah, no, it was awesome to have him.
Yeah.
All right, let's
cool.
jump
well,
in.
Let's jump into the interview. And before we get into it, I want to do a full disclosure. I know Eric. I met him 5.5 years ago when I started at TechCrunch. He was the co-editor of the old site, and he left in February 2014, if I'm not mistaken. It's frightening that I still know that. But I'm happy to have you here. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
Enjoying the sunshine.
Oh, yeah. It's hot out there, isn't it?
Learning about podcasting from you guys.
Well, not that we know much. At least let me speak for myself. But
you know, back when I was doing tech blogging, I feel like podcasting had sort of not been as hot as it is now. There was like Odeo, it became Twitter, and like I forget what happened to the rest of Odeo. It's in the TechCrunch archives somewhere. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, yeah, like this decade, it's been climbing back, and I guess with politics and everything else, and sort of the revenue models getting more baked, the audience, everyone having cell phones for their commutes or.
Yeah,
whatnot,
sure.
It's like suddenly there. So it's cool to see you guys do it. It seems like
awesome.
good fit with TC.
So you left TechCrunch, like I said, in 2014. And you left to do what?
Local news.
More specifically?
Hoodline.
So what is Hoodline?
Hoodline has gone through a few phases. The big thing we just announced is a local data wire service where we basically take large data sets where we can get them. And then we analyze them. Our team of data scientists analyzes them. And then our editorial staff works with the data scientists to figure out interesting stories. And right now our goal is figuring out stories that we can tell many places every day. And so that means using some text templating, automated text from a company called Automated Insights, where we actually take the data sets, design these templates, dump the different data sets in, and that allows us to produce like hundreds or thousands of stories. Like, for example, we use real estate rental price data from Zumper, a real estate company you guys read about, to be able to produce things like a weekly, here are the like, here's what $2,000 gets you in San Francisco and Soma these days. And then you can do like basically an automated article that's like a review of all of the different, you know, sort of apartment rental options that are posted.
And you can do stuff using this data with food and restaurant openings and
it's
and
really anything with the data. I mean, we Hoodline began as a network of neighborhood blogs in San Francisco. It actually grew out of sort of a more organic sort of group in 2010. It started in 2010 by a guy named Andrew Dudley. He and I were the ones who really, with Rose Garrett, Brian Mosley, some other folks, put together sort of like the first version of it, which was when I left TechCrunch. And that was very much like we had a freelance network. Brian built us this great custom CMS that was focused on like distributing to neighborhoods. So I had a bunch of different features from what you'd get in sort of a standard WordPress implementation. And we also analyzed a lot of local data. And that the local data part and sort of the understanding of like what people at the neighborhood level are interested in is what eventually ended up forming the base of how we thought about telling these kind of stories at this much larger scale.
What, and you expanded from San Francisco to Oakland as well, right?
Yeah, that we did that December of 2016.
Had you had plans to expand beyond that?
We certainly would have liked to. I mean, basically it cost a lot of money to expand, and the business model was not something we had figured out to be able to do that.
So it's like, it's also like money's not going into.
Well, yeah. I mean, we had raised a large seed round, I guess by these today's standards, maybe not that large, but, and that was what funded us in 2014. Before then it had been bootstrapped. So yeah, I mean, we did look at like trying to raise a bunch of money and expand sort of DNA Info style. I think like we, you know, before I did this, I had definitely been watching what they were doing. And the sort of first lesson I had was that like, I was always like, oh man, that's like so expensive to operate. It's awesome that they're hiring all these full-time reporters in all these different neighborhoods. But like, how are you going to like get the, you know, the advertising to cover that? And I, you know, the whole like saga of the shutdown and the unionization and everything, like the sort of like service level reason was obviously that, Joe Ricketts, the owner, didn't want to do unions and had enough power to just end the whole thing because of that. But I don't know him. I've never talked to him. But I assume he didn't see a strong business in what he was doing. And, you know, that's just because the, like, they did a lot of interesting stuff. They had another product that was kind of like this neighborhood forum thing, like Nextdoor, but it plugged into like the comment section of the blog posts. They were starting to do these interesting neighborhood level market research reports, and like I believe in all of that stuff. But I think it's just like I imagine if the business was like profitable, he would have sold it.
But Eric, something that I'm still trying to wrap my head around. So this data platform that you recently launched. So is Hoodline selling that to other media publications?
We are. It's pretty new. We started the process of working on this like last spring and summer, and we started testing out the stories with ABC, the sort of TV stations Disney owns that are, there's 8 stations around the country. We've had a multi-year relationship with them for a bunch of other projects. So they're like, and they're an investor as well. So like that was a close relationship. And then with Bay Area News Group, which is like East Bay Times, Mercury News. And then we're friendly with SF Gate, SF Chronicle, and they Hearst, some of the Hearst properties. So we did some tests there as well. So that was, we only really just started doing the tests like the second half of last year, and it like sort of got really going in like November, December. And so this month we're like, okay, the market actually wants this. Like local media is actually like interested in sort of getting more hyper local coverage. I hate that word, but it's
hyper local.
No one's thought of a better one.
Cause I mean,
I use neighborhood. I like that term better than hyper local, but
I'm wondering, could TechCrunch, do you see a world in which TechCrunch could benefit from some of this Hoodline data?
Potentially. It depends how interested you are in, like, I mean, right now, the two main kinds of stories we do are about local businesses or about, like, housing.
Okay.
It totally dependent on what we have available, though. Like, you know, if we get access to, like, office data, we could analyze sort of things about, I mean, to be frank, I think like I've started like having a couple casual conversations with the folks over at Crunchbase. I think the Crunchbase data set, you can imagine us like doing some cool things with that, where like understanding sort of startup trends across the country and how like there are variations. So I need to go talk to those guys some more.
Okay.
Tell Ben Serino that I am too. I've been meaning to do that.
Yeah, I'm particularly interested in if you have any data around transportation in San Francisco.
It's, here's basically what it comes down to. The sort of local government data sets that are like building permits, you know, they're different kinds. It's a whole, I understand you're from here, right? So
yeah.
You've like.
Born and raised.
Yeah. So you know how like, you know that like the city government's like a big sprawling organization with like a lot of different departments.
Right.
It's often the case with these sort of governments where they each have their own ways of doing things. It wasn't really, you know, they each have their own software systems they use that they maintain in various states of repair. Basically, the data is not easy to analyze across places. And like for us, we're trying to have like something we can do locally nationwide. And this is a problem. Anyone you talk to in journalism who works with local data will tell you this, but it's like there's a ton of work that goes into like if you want to compare like transport, any sort of transportation data, it's like people all in different cities have different methods of collecting it, analyzing it, presenting it. And so there's just a ton of work that goes into like trying to put it all together. And that's actually like one of the most interesting things is that like in the last 10 years with the rise of all of these tech products that are like used by millions of people all the time everywhere, and like with phones that are like explicitly tracking where you're going all of the time, like that's when you opt in on the app on the iPhone to location tracking, you are basically creating a ton of data exhaust about like not just yourself, but with everyone doing that, it's like going everywhere, right? Like, and so all of these different companies have the ability to start to understand what you're doing. And most of them have like a specific business reason that they're focused on, like trying to sell you more ads or whatever, based on where you like to go, if you go to bars or restaurants or gyms or whatever. But it's like there's now sort of the problems with the local government data sets that were because it was this whole sort of manual IT process is actually almost inadvertently solved because all of these phones and apps and everything are generating like comprehensive data sets where it's like the company for its own business reasons is like trying to organize that data as effectively as possible, right? So that means, you know, a company like Yelp, and because of their user data, when their users are like reporting a store is open or closed, that is actually way more comprehensive than I think any public data set you could find about local business activity. At least in there's census, there's tax stuff, but it's like once a year, right? Or it's like every 10 years, but like this is real time.
So as you create these data sets, mm-hmm. and effectively then fuel some of your local competitors, How does Hoodline continue to differentiate itself and ensure that it's still maintaining its own core audience?
Yeah, I mean, the sort of Ben Thompson at Stratechery has talked about this, but the sort of notion of a faceless publisher, where you provide infrastructure and revenue and a mix of whatever services you want, and then the content creator, he has a little diagram in a blog post about this that I think is really good, where it's like the sort of like inner circle of all of these like services that you provide, or maybe it's just one, and then all the content creators can just grab that. And that's historically what the AP is, right? It's a wire service. Mm-hmm. So that's like what we've been becoming is more of a wire service where it's like we're sort of a faceless publisher in these other cities. The Hoodline Bay Area is like we were able to get it pretty big. A lot of people read it, and it's a great place to test. I mean, you'll see all sorts of different data stories that we've tested on there. Some of them have none of the automation stuff. It's just like, what do people think about this data set? Do they think it's interesting? Is it interesting if we write about job openings in the city? Is it interesting if we write about deals? Is it like, what are the other kinds of topics that people want? And so it's like sort of, you know, we view it as, first of all, it's like a good audience. It functions great. The editor of it, Walter Thompson, is like really, really talented guy. But I think at this point we're focused on working with other media rather than trying to compete against them.
Well, and it's certainly going to expand you quickly nationwide.
Yeah.
And you're not taking away jobs, right?
I don't think it's possible. I mean, you know, people talk about automation. For sure, automation is like one for one seems to be taking away jobs. The hope of the technologists or the talking points you hear all the time, I'm sure, in this office from people you guys are interviewing is like new jobs will be created. Historically, that's what happens. I think everyone's kind of wondering how that's going to work this time around if everything's being automated. My view is that like the actual text and the video that humans produce is what's interesting to other humans. Like humans actually enjoy the human voice. And it's like, that's why social media exists as a big phenomenon, is because people actually want to talk to other humans. And it's like what AI and what this automation stuff does for news is mostly about the data and about the volume and telling kinds of stories that were never really possible without that stuff. Right. And that's like, instead of, I mean, there's a big, I would say even today at most media companies, what you see in terms of data journalism is some really amazing stuff out there, really important work being done. But I don't think it's that efficient, because what you see is you'll have a data team, probably very talented, getting a data set, analyzing it, produces a story or maybe a series of stories, and then that's it. And then next time they want to tell a story, they have to go find a new data set and clean that one up and do everything. And it's just like a ton of labor, right? And one of the big things that's possible now is telling many different stories from the same large data set that's rich enough where you can like do the cleaning and analysis process, and then you just have stories coming at you all day.
And then an edit team that's not been laid off.
Yeah.
Because of this takes and does with this information what they want. They can take this piece of data, put this image on it, and use their own CMS and put it out there for
an audience. I mean, it's what at its core, like the value of data is, and the value of bots and all of this stuff. Like, I mean, I don't know what your setup is today at TC, but you know, a lot of tech publications have some sort of script that's looking at like Form D filings to try to see when there's like financial changes at companies. And that's like an important source of scoops, right? Like you don't have to go out and look there every day. You can get a notification whenever that story is ready for you, and then you can go get it right away, right? Like that I think is more of the concept of like the data says the story's ready, let's write it up. And it's like at the local level, the reality is that there's no one to write it up left. Or maybe there was. Right. I mean, one thing I've learned at Hoodline is like, you know, I spent some quality time at the San Francisco Public Library looking through the archives about neighborhood history. There are so many neighborhood publications that have come and gone. And I think it's just like the financials have always been brutal at that level. Like the local businesses can't or don't advertise with you. Like, and I mean, your subscriber base is inherently the size of the neighborhood, more or less.
Mm. Yeah, this might be getting off topic, but are you familiar with any of the local newspapers in the Fillmore in San Francisco?
Like the new Fillmore?
Yeah, I think that's the one.
Yeah.
Do you work with them?
Thomas
at
Reynolds,
all?
Yeah.
We've
done some stuff with them over the years for sure, yeah. They have sort of a combo print website product. They distribute the new Fillmore distributes it, you know, the paper version to the doorstep of everyone. I think that's actually still I'm not the biggest supporter of like the print medium for obvious reasons, but I do think there's potentially a place for that still.
Yeah, actually. So when
I miss print,
I grew up in like Mount Davidson, Miraloma Park.
Yeah.
And my first job was delivering the neighborhood newspaper called the Miraloma Life. And I think it's still around, but yeah, it's just like your favorite hyper local.
Yeah. And
it's like, what's happening on this tiny street that literally no one else has heard of? And it's just, but it was important, and it is, and I feel like that's almost like what, in a way, Nextdoor has become, or that's the need that it's trying to fill.
Yeah.
But then of course with Nextdoor, then you have like all of the racist and the sexist and the homophobics are like, oh my God, like look out for this person. Like they seem sketchy.
Yeah.
Even though they've been living there for years. And like, that's actually their neighborhood that, these people who are fearful are, gentrifying.
So. Yeah. I mean, it's the, such a complicated problem because a product like Nextdoor is ultimately like reflects what's already there. With like
all platforms, yeah,
they've gone through changes to sort of like address some of the issues, right? And I think they've like improved on a lot of stuff there. But ultimately, if the people in the neighborhood are already, you know, discriminatory, they're just using Nextdoor as a medium to share. They're probably also on some blogs, like in the comment section, talking shit, right? Yeah. Like, or on Twitter or something, right?
Yeah.
Like, or they're grumbling or writing letters to the editor. Like, those people are already out there, and it's just, like, they are using that medium.
Yeah.
Same as a Facebook group, right, like, for a neighborhood.
Yeah, and so in the last, I guess it's, yeah, been the last month, Facebook has made some changes to its news feed to essentially make what people see more relevant. And by more relevant, that generally means, like, more local, like, more unique to them. Has Hoodline seen any changes in its traffic?
Not a ton, but, I mean, Facebook has always been good. But ultimately, our traffic is sort of nicely divided between like the sort of public facing sites we've had. It's always been sort of a nice division of direct traffic, email traffic, search traffic, social media traffic. And that's that from the other local publications I talk to, that's pretty normal. It's like partly because you just don't get the viral hits. And so you're like, you have a smaller audience, but it's more sort of diversely sourced. And generally more interested in you as a sort of publication, as a brand. So I think that sort of naturally happens. I actually think it could be a good fit. And it's also like, you know, remember Facebook once upon a time was a locally focused product, right? Like back when it was on college campuses. And that actually is in their DNA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forgot about that actually.
Yeah, I know everyone has. Yeah. But like, I remember when they were growing and it was like, when everyone thought about it as just like a campus social network, and they had dreams of like launching in New York City and you could find other people in New York City. And that was like kind of a shocker to the user base at the time.
Yeah. Even when Facebook, when they, what was it, their graph search or something? So you could search for like friends who live in San Francisco or LA or whatnot. Mm. And I feel like it's partly available, but I actually really liked that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it helped me. So, like, if I was traveling somewhere, I could say, like, okay, friends, like, I'm going to Birmingham next week. So, I could search friends in Birmingham or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'm sure that's in a menu somewhere.
Maybe. Yeah.
You can Google it to find out where it is.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So.
Cool. I hope to you're gonna keep us posted on what Hoodline continues to do in the future.
Hey, I've given TechCrunch plenty of exclusives about. I'm not sure if you guys cared, but I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for coming in, Eric.
Yeah, totally. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, okay.
Megan and I would like to shout out our producer Christopher Gates and our executive producer Yashad Kulkarni.
Catch us next Saturday morning wherever you listen to podcast.
Peace.
I'm so glad I'm not an actor.
Please think about that.
Yeah. Do it again. No!
I don't want
to. I'm not doing it again. I quit. Why did I get into this profession?